Well, this is Dr. Stanback here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests. And, well, today our special guest is Joyce Riley from the Power Hour. And, of course, I'm going to be appearing on her program early tomorrow morning. We're going to be having a discussion of masonry. And Joyce was good enough to come on with us today to talk about what's happening to our servicemen and women who are going over to Iraq, and, of course, the incidents of suicide among them. Joyce, thank you so very much for being with us again.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan, and I really thank you for coming on tomorrow morning and appearing with Paul Jeffers to discuss secret societies. I am really thrilled that we're going to finally have this discussion.
Well, I'm really looking forward to it. I just finished reading the book this morning, and so I know what his feelings are. I think it's a fascinating book, a lot of good information. But, of course, we won't talk too much about it. That's for tomorrow morning. Let's talk today, this afternoon, about what's happening to our servicemen. We know many of them are coming back, and we know that within the 3 months of the time they get back, about a third of them have come down with an illness. They call it post-traumatic stress or whatever it may be. I personally believe it's, similar to the Gulf War syndrome, but what about suicide among these people? What are we doing to their hearts and to their mind and to their souls?
Well, it seems right now that we have a higher level of suicides than ever in the military. Now, this is not among the people who have retired from the military, who are no longer serving. It is among the people who are still active duty. Now, that is what is so surprising, is they are committing suicide on active duty status. Now, to me, this ought to be something that the Department of Defense and the military investigating agencies should be taking a very, very strong look at and saying, wait a minute, what is going on here? While they're in service, committing suicide. And I think a lot of it has to do with, number one, the exposures they've had in Iraq. I think it has to do also with the experience of what they were told to do in Iraq. And now they are sorry, now they are feeling regrets over having done it. And I think it's also, there is probably certainly a certain level of legitimate PTSD if that occurs. But I want to address that issue, Dr. Stan, because I don't know if we have real PTSD separate and apart from the exposures and the experiments that have been done on our military. So let's say you were to take away the vaccines and the vaccine-induced problems that these people have. You take away the experiments that have been done, especially in the Navy, which are known for doing experiments on our military. You take away the depleted uranium exposure, the chemical, biological exposure, etc., the pesticide exposure. I don't know that there is any way that you can isolate whether or not PTSD occurs. Now, granted, I know that there are people that come back from a war and they've been really shaken and it's hard to get back to real living. But the problem is that we have no way of knowing now because they've lumped all these servicemen into one category and called it PTSD. So what we're seeing, and by the way, there is a the American Psychological Association defines PTSD in the DSM-4. And if you want to go and get some reference material, check out psych.org. That's PSYCH.org. Because the military was charged by Congress with the job of screening our military prior to going to war and upon returning from war, because that was their whole excuse in the first Gulf War was, well, we never checked these people for depression before they left, so how do we know they weren't depressed before they came in the military, before they went to the war? As if that makes any difference, because depression is depression, it should be treated, or illness is illness and it should be treated.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here with Joyce Riley of the Power Hour. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Joyce Riley, who is the host of the Power Hour. And Joyce is talking about the incidents of, and rather frightening incidents of suicide among our active duty personnel at the present time. Of course, Joyce was in the military. She was a captain, a flight nurse, and has a lot of military experience. And actually, of course, was a victim of the Gulf War illness after the first Gulf War. So she knows of what she speaks. Under any circumstances, apparently, there's a great deal of problems with our people when they come back from Iraq. About a third of them within 3 months are ill. Now, these are people, not those casualties who have lost arms or legs or had severe head injuries, will never be right, but these are people who ostensibly came back healthy, and suddenly they become, extremely emotionally distraught, and many of them complain of diffuse illnesses. And the question is, what is this? Joyce suggests that they experiment on our personnel. We know that they do. We carry a book called Vaccine A, which goes into, of course, the fact that all the scientific studies show that they experimented, and the government, just as they did with Agent Orange, is lying about it and say, oh, we would never experiment on our military personnel. They've been experimenting on them for the last 50 years in one way or another. They're simply human guinea pigs who have no rights once they sign on. But pick up the story there, Joyce.
Well, when they return and they have this problem, and the Department of Defense says, well, we don't know if you had it when you left or not, as if that's supposed to vindicate the Department of Defense and they have no involvement in their case any longer. However, the Department of Defense, in my estimation, is doing this by design. Now, like I said, after the first Gulf War, they were charged with the job of screening these troops or doing supposed to be a physician screening of them and a mental health screening prior to their leaving and then upon returning. Neither are being done right now, which is supposed to give them the excuse to be able to say, oh, well, we just don't know what's going on, and yeah, we're guilty of not doing the testing prior to leaving, but, you can't prove that it's anything that has to do with the second Gulf War. So this is the way that they are able to sort of deflect any kind of responsibility. So what happens when they return is these troops start having bizarre problems. Now, I would say that the one problem they have more than anything is inability to sleep. Some of the drugs and the exposures that they have had keep them from having a good sleep neurologically. And as you know, if you don't go into a deep REM sleep, then you're not able to function the next day. I mean, but imagine that these people do this on a daily basis.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Joyce is just saying that one of the most common complaints of our servicemen when they return is they can't sleep. And, of course, if you can't sleep, you can't really function well the next day. So this is a very, very common complaint among our servicemen who are having real problems. Pick the story up there, Joyce.
And it's not just not being able to sleep. It is the fact that they may fall asleep for 30 minutes and be awake the rest of the night in a fitful experience. Or they may fall asleep for 10-minute increments and then wake up again. But if you do this again night after night after night, the brain is not rested, the body is not rested, they become what's called hypervigilant. Now, think about when you've been really, really tired and you're driving a car and you're driving across the country and you're driving more hours than you probably should have and you haven't had much sleep, and all of a sudden things just begin to really impact you. You become very hypervigilant, which is the term that's being used, and you feel as though things are more louder than they really are or more threatening than they really are. Well, that's what happens to these troops. One of them told me, he said, if I go into a Walmart and if somebody goes in front of me, he said, I have this desire to want to kill them. Now, that's not normal. That is not a normal feeling. It is a normal feeling to say, excuse me, buddy, that's kind of rude. But these guys have an overreaction. I told a story before of a troop after Gulf War I that was in, Pensacola, Florida. He went to buy a car from a used car dealer. And he was just out on a Saturday morning like any normal guy. And I had known the man before. And he was a ranger, and he was a very wonderful person, well-intentioned, who had been very sick subsequent to the Gulf War. The used car dealer said to him, excuse me, buddy, are you just kicking tires? Are you really serious about buying a car? Now, that's not an abnormal thing for a used car dealer to ask, is it, Dr. Stan?
Nope,
that wouldn't be an abnormal thing. Normally, you'd say, yeah, well, I'm just wanting to see what's on the lot or whatever, or yeah, I'm serious. This guy felt so threatened by that remark. Now, that's the only remark that that used car dealer gave him. He did not even know this man. And he picked up a hammer, which was nearby, and he bludgeoned the guy to death. The guy is now in prison for the rest of his life over a situation that he doesn't even understand what happened. Now, see, that's not malicious intent. That's not premeditated. That is a young guy who returned from the Gulf War with documented problems, and yet now he serves a prison sentence for the rest of his life. There's so many of these guys. I hear this all the time. One guy was a young black man that called me. He wrote to me. He was in prison at the time, and he had gone into a convenience store to get some cigarettes. He was one of those guys that can't sleep, that had neurological problems, had problems with memory. He went in, got the cigarettes, thought he had paid for them, walked out, and he was arrested, and they said that, and for whatever reason, they decided to bring charges against him to make an example of him, and he served 3 years in jail, in prison, because of those cigarettes. And he said, I, to this day, don't even know what happened. He said, I may be guilty of taking them, but he said it was not my intention. And we've got a country full of these people right now. Now, unbeknownst to a lot of people, you may not know, the average listener to CNN is not going to know that when those troops are overseas and they develop problems with depression, and let's say they've got neurological problems or insomnia secondary to depleted uranium exposure or pesticide exposure or whatever, they are now given antidepressants on the front line. People don't realize that. They are medicating them with SSRI drugs and other drugs on the front line. They are obviously given no counseling. They are given no testing. They are not asked, hey, soldier, are you having some problems? They simply take them into they go into the clinic, they give them their drugs, and they leave. And I have been told that it is a huge number of people that are on these drugs on the front lines. And so that only adds to the problem of their instability. So you give somebody who's unstable an SSRI drug, which is already shown, and of course you know the propensity for suicide of people taking these SSRI drugs, then you've got a multiple problem. So we've got the suicide rates from those that have been in Iraq and Afghanistan are just absolutely off the charts. We know that there were 11 service members who committed suicide in Iraq between 2004 and 2005. They had shown signs of problems, but they were kept on duty despite the fact that they were showing signs of mental agony. Now, I've also been told that when you have insomnia so bad that you cannot sleep, period, you can't even say what your name is the next morning, these people are not given any kind of help. They are told, too bad, soldier, you know, suck it up and do your job. So they are not helped in any way, shape, or form. They get even worse. And then you have bizarre crimes that are taking place that you only read about in the Air Force Times now, of people that are doing crimes against their own soldiers, killing their own soldiers. And I don't think that's their intent. I don't think that we have an army that decides to go after each other and kill each other. But we've got some 385,000 troops now that have served more than one overseas commitment. In other words, 385,000 of them have been to Iraq or Afghanistan two or three times, some of them totaling, 20, 30, 40 months, which is an unbelievable amount of exposure. So at the end of the third tour over there, if they have a tour of 18 months and you take that times three, I mean, you've got an awful lot of time that has been spent in a battlefield that is literally full of depleted uranium or is radioactive. It settles in the brain. The exposure problems that they have are just, I don't think we can even imagine how that affects them on a daily basis. So we talked about the sleep deprivation being the first problem. Second to that is memory loss. They start having situations in which their short-term memory is just gone. They could have done something, and 10 minutes later don't know that they did it. And I have also talked about the example of the young man in New Mexico when his attorney called me. It was a public defender, called me and said, I need to know what you know about memory loss in Gulf War I troops. And I said, well, I can probably tell you about the case that you're going to tell me about. I said, before you even tell me, let me describe your client to you. And I did. And she was absolutely astounded. She said, how did you know down to almost every single symptom? And I said, because I've seen it hundreds of times before your client. In this case, this young man went out to clean his garage on Saturday morning. And now this is when I was talking to him, was later on Saturday morning, because we were doing a conference call with the attorney. And he came in from cleaning the garage, and we were on this three-way phone call with the attorney, the client, and myself to talk with him about his situation. And he said, well, I really need to hurry because I've got to go clean my garage today. And his wife came on the phone, and she said, honey, you just cleaned it all this morning. You've been out there all morning long. Now, this was not some defense for his case. He really didn't even know he'd cleaned the garage. Now, imagine how stupid, how incompetent, how vulnerable you feel when somebody tells you, no, that's what you did for the past 4 hours. You cleaned the garage. It's all clean. Well, in his case, he had harmed someone, had hit someone, didn't even remember that he had done it, and the attorney was trying to find a decent defense, of which, of course, none of the judges will allow into the courtroom any testimony regarding Gulf War illness, regarding anything that happened in the military. So these people are out there all over. I mean, all over this country. They are in other countries. Australia is now seeing the problem with their troops. Canada is seeing the problem. So we have got a number of people that are literally like cocked guns ready to go off. And it frightens me because what happens when this man comes home from having served three tours in Afghanistan, he and his wife, or Iraq, and he and his wife have a baby, and this baby cries incessantly, and she's gone to work, and he's taking care of the baby. What happens? There have been so many deaths of children, deaths of spouses, over absolutely no reason. So my concern is that we are bringing back a group of people that are going to be committing crimes far more than we could have ever imagined, which is why you see so many of the stories of murders now, they've been in the military. And you know, it surprises me when, you know, when I start to see a story and I start to read into the story and I get a feel for it, I say to myself, oh my goodness, this is going to be a vet. And sure enough, and he proudly served in the military from blah, 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 blah. And so what we are doing is, these 378,000 troops now that have served more than one tour in Iraq and Afghanistan are going to be coming back with mental disorders that are real. They are organic. They are not mental disorders because the guy just had a break and he was a bad Marine because he couldn't take the stress. Now, this is the compounded problem, Dr. Stan, which creates the scenario of the guy thinking he's going crazy, can't explain to his wife what's happening. She's frustrated with him because he keeps telling her things that he doesn't even, he says, you know, she says, did you do such and such? No. And then she finds out he did, or vice versa. They don't know what they're doing on a short-term basis. So these are the people that we're going to be left with are going to be committing suicide in even greater levels. And what we're going to do about it, I have no idea, because the VA has pretty well purged themselves of treating them.
And, of course, the great tragedy is, you know, there actually are studies now that they've done recently up there in Vancouver where they've given mice a squalene and aluminum comparable to what they've gotten in their experimental vaccines. And, of course, they find evidence of neurological damage in the mice. And, of course, the Army keeps saying, we would never use squalene. Well, that's an experimental adjuvant. If we know that they used it in the first Gulf War, are they using it again? Are they trying to destroy the lives of our young people? You really need, of course, to look into it. You need to read a book we carry called Vaccine A, and we'll tell you more. Well, Joyce picked the story up there.
Well, the problem doesn't stop there, because when they come back here and their wives get fed up with them not being able to handle child care or thinking that they are safe with their children, you know, and I just say to every woman out there, imagine you have the job, your husband's been sick, came back from Iraq or Afghanistan, and he's the one that is doing the child care. So you find out later that he took a nap and left the baby alone, or left the children outside playing at 2 years of age. Imagine that he forgot to feed them. He forgot to change them. He doesn't know what he's doing. So what is the wife going to do? Of course, they go off to the VA hospital. The VA hospital then gives them SSRI drugs, Ambien. They give them all kinds of, not just psychotropic drugs, but antidepressants. Then they give them they give drugs for the neurological system, hopefully, like Depakote and drugs that they think are going to improve their neurological system, along with ecstasy. That's being used now in the VA systems, and for anybody that doesn't believe that, just do a Google search and put in ecstasy, the drug, put in ecstasy and VA hospitals, and you'll see the studies that's being done on using an illegal street drug on our troops. So the wife says, all right, that does it. I've had it. My children are not safe with you. The VA's put them on drugs, who makes them only worse. Now they do sleep, but not a good sleep. They sleep a bizarre sleep that has hallucinations and complications with that. So the wife finally says, I don't want to do this, but I've got to divorce my husband. I love him, but I can't put my children in this situation. So the wife leaves, or the husband leaves, or whatever. The husband begins to self-medicate. He is in such pain. And I hear this over and over again, because without any kind of real pain medication for the physical pain they might be experiencing, or any elimination of the problem that is causing emotional pain that is so strong, these people now begin to self-medicate with beer, with wine, with booze, with marijuana, with speed. And they use cocaine because it's the only way that they can stay awake, because they're so tired from not having a good night's sleep that they end up using speed, which, as you can imagine, gives them just an adrenal rush. They're exhausting their adrenals. They don't have good thyroid function, and every system in the body then cascades toward this amazingly compromised individual. Well, what happens to this veteran who the wife says, I can't live with you, and I cannot put my children in your care. You're going to have to leave. Where can he go? He has no job. Let's say he's been lucky enough to get compensation from the Department of Defense with the VA, and let's say maybe they gave him 10% for headaches, 10% for insomnia, 10% for a left shoulder problem or whatever. So now they have 30%, and 30% disability is about going to give you, well, 10% disability, I think, is about $118. So it'd be three times 118. So this is all the man now has to live on. So where does he go to get an apartment on $400 or $500 a month to live on? They don't. They become homeless. So right now, I know in the first Gulf War, over 90% of the people were divorced as of about the year 1997. Now, that's a huge number. Somebody needs to be asking, why would 90-some percent of the people be divorced?
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Joyce is really describing the plight of the veterans of the first Gulf War, and she said over 90% of them, the veterans of the first Gulf War, are now divorced, and she's talking about the problems that the veterans of both the first and the second Gulf War are facing, and especially with the second Gulf War, so many of them, you know, simply are not able to think effectively, and certainly, what is that, about 30% of the patients, you think, people are coming back, what percentage of those coming back?
Those are 30% documented. I think it's closer to 50% right now. I think it's closer to 50% because a lot of them are not going to the VA and getting disability claims put in. A lot of them don't even have the wherewithal to be able to do that. That's quite a procedure. I mean, it takes somebody that can really think to go through with that whole process, because it's frustrating, it's time-consuming, it requires a lot of paperwork, and they just don't have the ability to do that. But what we do know is that there's somewhere between 200,000 and 400,000 homeless veterans right now. Between 200,000 and 400,000. Now, if there were, if the majority of homeless people were plumbers, we'd say, man, what kind of putty are these guys using? You know, what is it doing to their brains? If 40%, I mean, if 50% of all the homeless were used car salesmen, we'd say, you know, what is going on in the used car salesman business? Because there has to be some reason for one population group to be homeless. And with veterans, all we do is simply say, oh, well, they're veterans, and put them on the shelf. Well, about 40%, the amount of males is about 40%. It ranges between probably 40% and 90% of them are males at any given time, and usually only about 4% are females. But the problems with them going to the street, of course, is they're trying to figure out where they get their next meal. They're not getting any kind of nutrition whatsoever. They can only afford to get a hamburger at McDonald's maybe, and so that's all they have. And so we've got probably about 50-plus percent of them abusing drugs and living on the street, begging money and putting whatever money they have toward drugs and just trying to feel good. So the question, though, is what are we going to do? Because the Department of Defense knows full well what we're talking about. This is nothing new. But because they are able to live in their pristine towers and act as though we're a veterans advocate, and they have the VFW annual meetings with the president there, everybody thinks that, oh, they take care of the veterans. So when a veteran comes from the street and says, look, I couldn't get any help. I served in Iraq, or I served in Afghanistan, or I served in both, and three tours, and I came home, and the VA says you must be crazy or you've got a mental disorder, what do people say? Well, hey, guy, you better get your act together. These people are incapable of getting their, quote-unquote, acts together. And so on the street now, we have dangerous veterans. And I say dangerous because they're not thinking well. We have a lot of them who have gone to, now, when they can still work and still function, where do they go? They go to places, they've told me, where there's not very many people around. In other words, they can make a living without anybody around them. And the primary choice for a lot of them was truck drivers. I can't tell you the number of truck drivers that I have met who said, I can't be around another human being. I got to be in my truck. I've got to do my thing. I drop off my load. I go to the next place. But the problem, they can't sleep well, so they're tired. So they're taking things to stay awake while they're driving the trucks. Now, how safe is that? Then you've got people who are neurologically becoming impaired, still driving the trucks. I talked to a special forces troop who, at one point, we had a sign on our car that said Gulf War veterans, and he was driving an 18-wheeler, and he signaled to us to pull off the side of the road. Now, when an 18-wheeler signals you to pull off the side of the road, you're kind of like, whoa, what is going on here? But we had a CB radio in the car, and he radioed to us, and he said, I'm a vet. He said, please pull off at the next exit. I have to talk to you. So we pulled off at the exit. He came up to us. He said, I was a Navy SEAL. He said, I'm driving this truck because I am so incredibly sick. And he said, I'm at least able to pass the CM, whatever the driver's license is for trucking. And he said, I've got my commercial driver's license, but he said, I am so incredibly sick. And he said, I saw a Gulf War veteran on your car. And he said, please, does anybody have any information to help me? And it was so heartbreaking to see this man desperate with nobody to turn to. He said, I've been to the VA, I've been to the American Legion, I've been everywhere, and no one will help me. And he said, I'm not alone. He said, because all us truckers talk about this.
And, of course, the thing is, of course, that the VA and the veterans are foreign wars, and so many of these veterans organizations are simply in the pocket of the government, and they're covering for the gross mistreatment of our veterans. We'll be back here in just a moment or two with Joyce Riley from the Power Hour. This is a very real problem. Gulf War illness is a very real illness. You'll certainly want to get Joyce's DVD, which we do carry. We'll be talking more about that and lots more this next half hour. Well, Joyce, go right ahead.
Well, there is some good news in that on November 13th of 2006, the VA did announce grants for homeless veterans. Now, the problem is there's a website that you can go to find out about grants for homeless veterans, but how many homeless veterans do you think can go to a computer and find out that there's grants for them? I mean, this is so sad to think that, you know, they've made them available, but they're obviously not going to the streets, though, and saying to these vets, hey, here's some help, let me help you. They're saying, well, you get yourself to a library and you find out about this yourself and, you know, you can get some help. Well, the grants were to assist veterans with greater access to assistance. Now, the Veterans Affairs Chairman, Jim Nicholson, who I have to tell you I have absolutely no respect for, said only through a dedicated partnership with community and faith-based organizations can we hope to end helplessness among veterans. I mean, how unbelievably inappropriate is a statement like that? How about if Mr. Jim Nicholson was to say, only if we stop medicating these people inappropriately and experimenting upon them and exposing them to these things, can we hope to end homelessness in our troops? Which is really what he should be saying. He says, veterans answered their country's call to serve during the greatest times of need, and now some live without shelter. Some? How about close to 500,000? And yet, they're not doing anything to help them. When you go to the VA, they turn you away, and they tell you that it's basically your problem. It's a mental problem, and there's no help for you, or you are ordered to take a number of these SSRI drugs, and some of the combinations of these, Dr. Stan, are just unbelievably strong. That no one, in my estimation, and from what a lot of the physicians have told me, should ever be placed on that many SSRI drugs or that many of the antidepressant and psychotropic drugs together. So we've got a situation that is growing, getting worse, and I fear, I really fear for each and every person out there, because you don't know when you're driving down that highway if that coming at you on the other lane is some Gulf War veteran, Gulf War I or Gulf War II, who hasn't been able to sleep for weeks and who is not really, really good at what he is doing or able to be rational at what he is doing. I fear for when you go into a driving situation and they get road rage, and all of a sudden, you know, you are being impacted by somebody who's not thinking clearly. Or the used car salesman who did nothing wrong whatsoever.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Okay, Joyce, go right ahead. Joyce is just saying that, you know, when we have so many young men who come back from the first Gulf War, the second Gulf War, who have emotional problems, and some of them pretty cannot control their rage. When they're out there in society, can this impact on you if you run across one of them? It's not these young men's fault. They've been experimented on, and they really did experiment on the boys in the first Gulf War. That was the cause of the Gulf War illness. We have the reports from the Veterans Administration. According to the Veterans Administration, anybody wants to check the figures, we'll be glad to send them to you. Over 80,000 of the 695,000 the troops that went over there, that's over 10%. Young, healthy men, 15 years ago, they're dead today. It couldn't happen. Just couldn't happen statistically. But, at least according to the Veterans Administration, it did. And they're keeping careful track of this social experiment. They just love to experiment on our boys. And if you haven't read the book, certainly the Vaccine A, and then, of course, if you haven't seen Joyce's video. But before we go on, Joyce, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with your ministry, how they can get in touch with your material.
I hope that everybody will show Beyond Treason to somebody who's getting ready to join the military. You know, and I say to them, just show it to them. And if they still choose to join the military, at least they have knowledge now of what goes on. Because no one has been able to look at Beyond Treason, which is a documentary that comes with the information itself on a CD-ROM. So you get the DVD and the CD-ROM with thousands of pages of documents that right there explain everything we're talking about. If they choose to join the military and they're a diehard Marine, then so be it. That is their choice. I'm not trying to keep people from joining the military. I'm trying to educate them before they join, so they won't do what we did in the first Gulf War and take 10 vaccines in one day that we weren't allowed to know what they were. So you can go online to beyondtreason.com and order the documentary. If you're a vet and if you would like a copy of it, we will send it to you at no charge. And we will even pay for the shipping. All you have to do is email us or fax us, and I'll give a fax number. Just fax a request for it with some type of proof of service so that we don't have, you know, 50,000 freeloaders that want the video that don't deserve it, but the veterans that do deserve it. If you fax us at 5998. Okay, let me give it again. Dave just helped me out here. Thank goodness for him. 573-378-5998. If you will fax us, then we will get you a copy of Beyond Treason. And it's so important. And if you're a vet, and if you can give out 10 or 20, and I know the last time I was on the program, you had some vets contacted me that wanted to be able to give away 10 or 20 of them at their American Legion or VFW meetings. And we sent them, 10 or 20 of them, and they gave them away. And that's what we want to do. That's the purpose of this, is because I can't deal with every vet out there. But the documentary can. And people can begin to understand that this is real, this is killing our people, and it is a problem that is going to get only worse, if we don't immediately somehow address this. Now, of course, Congress has been given the job of investigating Gulf War illness. The way this is handled through either the Veterans Administration, of course, they are tasked by Congress, or excuse me, by the Department of Defense to take care of veterans and take care of their issues. So the Veterans Administration then says, gee, we have a problem maybe with these first Gulf War troops. So we'll do some studies. They do those studies through an organization that is basically does the bidding for the U.S. government, gives them the answer that the DOD wants, which is, gee, we don't see any problem here, pays them millions of dollars to do studies, as they did some 700 studies on Gulf War veterans with millions of dollars of research money that went in the pockets of people that would give them the answer they wanted. I know that because I testified before the Gulf War Veterans Investigating Committee, and my testimony was excluded totally from the transcript. Was excluded. So we know that they only want to hear what they want to hear and they want people to believe. So in the case of the first Gulf War, they hired basically the Institute of Medicine to look at all the studies and evaluate whether or not there really was a Gulf War illness. What does the IOM say? What, 14 years later, they just came out with their recommendation this in 2006. Gee, we don't see a problem, but more research is needed. More money to go in more pockets of people that are going to do exactly what they want them to do. Now, in the case of depleted uranium, they saw this problem coming on quicker, and they decided to go ahead and have their blanket approval organization give them their clearance early on, so the DOD had the RAND Corporation do the bidding for them. They evaluated all of the evidence, exclusive of people like Dr. Doug Rocky and people that know radiation medicine militarily. They then came back, and the RAND Corporation said, we see no problem with depleted uranium. However, more research might be needed. So this is a tactic they do after every single war. Now, in the Beyond Treason documentary, you're going to see more types of experiments that have been done on their military. We talk about the drug BZ, we talk about which is a hallucinogenic drug given to the people in Vietnam, not all of them, but many troops in Vietnam. And, of course, they committed the friendly fire. They killed their own troops because they were under the effects of a hallucinogenic drug that lasted for weeks, not days. We talk about the atomic veterans, which is such a sad case. Most of them have now died that were affected by the radiation and left families and children that were deformed as a result of that. But then we go on from experiment to experiment and literally wipe the slate clean and move on, or at least the DOD does. They keep the VA functioning for a very good reason. You can't have all these veterans going to doctors because doctors would be seeing, and I'm talking about civilian physicians, would be seeing wait a minute, why is it every Gulf War veteran has neurological problems, can't sleep, has headaches, and throws up every day? They might start to see a trend. So what do? They keep them in the VA system. Now, this has been going on for years. You don't have a system where they can go to a TRICARE or they can go to an HMO. They don't want these veterans going to an HMO. They don't want them going to private doctors. They want them going to VAs where they can follow the experiments and follow the troops. So you don't have this information going to the mainstream physician. When you do, you have physicians calling me, like one day on Thanksgiving Day about 4 years ago, I got a call from a doctor at Johns Hopkins, and he explained that he had a patient that was in excruciating pain in his spinal cord. And I said, let me explain to you, before you go any further, I said, let me tell you what you're seeing in that patient. And he said to me, he was a neurologist, and he said, you have no way of knowing what my patient is experiencing. And I said, let me tell you. I experienced him down to the exact almost time that it was occurring to him. And he was astounded. He couldn't even talk. He said, I don't believe this. He said, I have never seen a case like this. And I said, sir, that's exactly what I had. I know what it is. I've been there, I've done it, and I've talked to a lot of people that have had this. And yes, it was a mycoplasma settling in the spine, and it was a horrendous, and I don't even want to talk about it, because see, if I talk about it with other people and they can say, well, she tells about it on the air. No, I'm just saying that I had it in the spine, and I know exactly what it's like, and I happened to be in the hospital at the time, so it's documented. But you see, the world wants us to think that the DOD just can't figure it out. I got a call one day from Navy Captain Chaco Brown. He was the representative from the DOD that called me to tell me to quit giving out the documentary called Gulf War Illness Factor Fiction. And we still have copies of that, and we're now putting it out in DVD because it is the same. It was put out in 1996, and it explains everything we're seeing today. And I want people to know that nothing that we talked about in 96 has changed, that we knew then. So if this nurse if this nurse of 35 years can figure it out, the Department of Defense can figure it out. And Chaco Brown said to me, we want you to stop giving away that documentary to veterans. Because a lot of people had gone to, especially Lackland Air Force Base, and given it to their physicians down there and said, here's what this nurse said. And I got calls from some of these physicians. They were irate at me at trying to play doctor and tell these troops what was wrong with them. And they were very angry with me, and they said, I'm sick and tired. He said, I've got a whole bunch of your videos here that they come in here and they expect me to watch your video. He said, I've seen it. He said, you're wrong. The military is doing everything they can. Well, Chaco Brown said to me, we want you to stop giving this documentary out to veterans. I said, well, if you can tell me what is inaccurate in it, I will be glad to change it. He said, it's not that. You're one of us. And I said, no, sir. If you think I am one of you and I'm going to participate in the wholesale slaughter of our military by failing to treat them, I said, you are absolutely wrong. As a result of that, he said, well, we need you to stop giving it out. And I said, no. I said, as long as there is a veteran who needs to know what is wrong with him, I'm going to provide this. I gave them out, 40,000 of them, at my own expense. And I will tell you that I am so glad that I did, because there are people that it saved them from suicide simply because they had an answer. They weren't a bad Marine. They weren't just feigning their illness. It was real. They found out what the problem was. And at least it kept them from committing suicide. And no, I can't. I've got letters from probably over, I don't know how many thousand letters we have now. Of pictures of the people, of their stories, and they're all the same. Whenever the media comes here and used to want to do stories on Gulf War illness, I would pull out these group of letters, and I would say, here's the story right here. These men and women are the story, not me. I am simply standing on Superman's cape at the Pentagon and saying, how dare you do this to these troops? And you know, Dr. Stan, I never knew we were going to be facing this again with Gulf War II. I mean, I cannot tell you how I felt when I saw this war beginning and knew about the increased use of depleted uranium, and I could see it all happening, and I went on coast to coast and talked with George Norrie about this. and nobody believed me. And I got hate letters from everybody saying, how dare you be negative before a war? The least you can do is support the troops. Why don't you go live with Jane Fonda? Why don't you, you know, all these things. And I was saying, no, I just want you to know what's about to happen. I know what the Department of Defense has done to a minute degree. That's all I have access to. But as you know, in the Rockefeller report that you put out, Dr. Stan, that you can provide the people there, Senate Report 103-97, which absolutely changed my life when I saw that, states, during the past 50 years, hundreds of thousands of our military have been exposed, have been experimented upon without their knowledge or consent. I repeat, hundreds of thousands of our military have been experimented upon without their knowledge or consent. Now, the one guy that I remember reading about was prior to the Gulf War. He was given a hallucinogenic drug. He went home, and during the night, he woke up. His wife was not told what he was given because he didn't even know what he was given. He was told that he was supposed to be testing a uniform inside of a tank. He went inside of this to test the heat on a uniform, and he almost killed his wife that night. And he loved her dearly. She divorced him, left him, and he never knew till about 40 years later when he got in the mail a letter to all of those people who had received the psychedelic drug. That was the only time he knew that he had been experimented upon and why his life had developed into an absolute disaster. So we owe to the people that decide to serve for the right reasons. You know, I served, you served. We served for the right reasons. We believed in what we were doing at the time. Well, those guys going to Iraq, they believe in what they're doing also. And people say to me now, well, you can't go and support them. You can't help them out now because they are making a decision to go kill people. I said, look, I made a decision, and I said at one time if there was anything in my life I wanted to do, I wanted to be in the Air Force. That was it. If I couldn't be in the Air Force, nothing. I wanted to be in the Air Force. I wanted to be a flight nurse. One of the biggest days that I will ever remember is the day they pinned those wings on my uniform. And I got to take my first live mission flight with real patients. Because I felt like I was doing something. And I think everybody listening to this program that has been in the military knows that feeling. If they weren't drafted and they joined, they knew that feeling of patriotism, of support of this country, of caring for the wounded, or whatever it was. But you know, now we're finding out the military is different. And all I'm trying to do is say, save these lives before they go in. It's not just the ones that are getting their limbs blown off. And yeah, that is horrendous. We probably had, if the truth were known, 20 to 30,000 deaths coming out of Iraq and Afghanistan. And probably close to 50 or 100,000 that have been injured. And then if you put on top of that the post-traumatic stress disorder, or the depression, or the mental problems, the neurological problems, I'm sure that it's around 200,000, 300,000 now. Because they're not telling you the truth that we've sent a million troops over there to fight this war. And my heart goes out to those people that are joining. You know, these kids that are 17, 18 years old right now were, what, 11 years old in the first Gulf War. They didn't know, just like I didn't know about Vietnam. I thought the guys that came back from Vietnam and that complained, I thought that they just, you know, had a foot fungus and wanted to be taken care of for a lifetime. I didn't know they were sick. I didn't know they were dying. They were going to give birth to children with deformities. We didn't know. But now we do. And we need to call these people on what they have done. Dr. Winkenwerder of the Department of Defense, who is so much involved in the cover-up of Gulf War illness. Some of the people there at the Department of Defense that they need to spend the rest of their natural lives in prison for what they have done. That is my opinion, and I stand by it. They need to be in prison. These troops, their lives are now worse than being in a prison. And the problem is, Dr. Stan, is they're going to linger. They're not going to get any better. They're going to get worse, but they're going to linger. They don't want to be a burden to their families. So what do we have? We have the highest rate of suicide ever in the military. And I can only say that during this season, you see a homeless guy, ask him if he's a vet. And then give him some money. And it just breaks my heart. It's getting to be so sad to get these phone calls every day, and I dread Christmas because the suicide phone calls come in. And we've got to be there.
Yes, we do, and I appreciate everything you do and that Dave does as well. We're going to be back in just a minute to wrap up today's program. Ladies and gentlemen, if you doubt that 80,000 of the boys we sent in the first Gulf War are dead, why, we'll be glad to send you the Veterans Administration statistics. We have it from the Veterans Administration. But you're never going to hear it from Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity or Brian Williams or the other people who've sold their souls for a great paycheck from the establishment that's sending our boys overseas to be crippled and to die. Well, Joyce, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
You know, Dr. Stan, I don't apologize for the tears because they're tears for them. I don't apologize for the feeling that I have because I know that what they're feeling is so incredibly horrendous. I can't even conceive of that. I know the pain that is going on right now as we speak. You know, we have a lady named Jeannie Dykus who has been making lap blankets for them and has been quilting quilts for these vets. And she said, I can't go save the world, but I can make a quilt for a vet. There are a lot of things that people can do. Go to your local service center. If you have a local nursing home for vets, just go in and do something nice for them because people just don't go in these places. Go to a veteran's home. You know, I don't even know if they'll allow people in vets' homes lately. I haven't been in them. But I do want to do that, and I do want to go and share some of these blankets and quilts with them. But, you know, we've got to get over the idea of it just can't happen in America, because it can. Our Department of Defense is cruel beyond belief in what they have done. And, you know, I am pleased when a vet will call me and say, thank you for being there. You know, thank you for doing Beyond Treason, because, you know, without you, no one has ever cared. You know, we give away Miracle 2 soap at no charge. Now, that's one thing that we can do. It's not much, but, you know, a gallon is $67.50. That's a lot of money. But we have not denied one vet Miracle 2 soap, and we give out usually between about $3,000 a month worth of soap to these vets at no charge. And it helps them because of all the problems that they have. It has helped them tremendously. And, you know, this is not being a pitch for selling it. It's a pitch for giving it away to them. But that's one thing that we can do, and they say over and over and write the most wonderful letters, thank you for being there, because nobody has cared since I got out of the military. Or nobody cared when they were in the military, really. So I just say thank you to you, sir, for giving me the opportunity to say this and to explain to the listeners what's happening to their sons and daughters. And don't let it happen to any more than are necessary. Let me give the fax number again. If you want to get a copy of Beyond Treason with all the documentation, thousands of pages, then you can order it by calling 877. Or do you have it there, Dr. Stan?
We actually do, Carrie, but do go ahead and give your number.
No, go ahead. You call Dr. Stan and get Beyond Treason. If you're a vet and you want it for free, then fax us at 573-378-5998. 573-378-5998. And Dave and I are going to continue to do this as long as we can, but I'll tell you, it is very emotionally draining, and I hate to feel and say that, Dr. Stan, because, you know, my problem is the least of problems.
Hold that just for a moment here. Well, our guest has been Joyce Riley. God bless you, Jason, and thank you for everything you do, and we'll be talking to you early in the morning.
You bet. Thank you so much, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye.
God bless.
All right, fine. Well, it was Joyce Riley, and, of course, I'm going to be on Joyce's program early tomorrow morning. I've got to be up at 5 o'clock so I can be on her 6 o'clock program here on the West Coast. But you have to understand that they're destroying the lives of our children. If you don't believe that they experiment on them, we have a government report called the Rockefeller Committee Report, and it's available through Radio Liberty. Actually, it was put out by the Veterans Administration in 1994 about all the wonderful experiments and all the lives that they destroyed. The Rockefeller Committee Report, official government publication, I tried to get the woman who did this report for the Veterans Administration to come on my program. She was quite afraid to do it for fear of retaliation. Then, of course, if you don't believe that they're creating horrible new diseases, we have the complete text of Dr. MacArthur's testimony before the House Appropriations Committee in 1969, where he asked for $10 million to create a new disease for which there's no immune response, and it can be used as another means of mass killing. We have the complete text of the National Security Study Memorandum that came out in 1974 over Henry Kissinger's testimony that was marked top secret for many years, telling the major thrust of our foreign and domestic policy is population control. We certainly have a four-tape set on the Gulf War illness. We have Against All Enemies, a book written by Seymour Hersh, inexpensive little book by written by a very well-known author. Against All Enemies, the story of the Gulf War illness. We have, of course, Joyce's video, and we recommend it's a DVD, actually, Against All, Beyond Treason, and what it basically does, you not only will see a dramatic DVD, but you'll get a CD with it that you can put on your computer, and it has all of the government documents that they do not want you or our veterans to know, or certainly our politicians to know. They're intentionally poisoning our boys. Why would you do that? Do you know a better way than to destroy a great nation, than to destroy a generation of our youth? If you'd like to see those pages from the Veterans Administration about the fact that 80,000 of our boys are already dead from the first Gulf War, we only lost 100 in battle, but we poisoned the rest of them with our vaccines and all the other experiments they did. Over 80,000 of those previously young, healthy men 15 years ago are dead today. And you will never, of course, hear this mentioned. We have a great book. It's called Vaccine A. It's a story of the experimental work that they did with, you know, the experimental vaccines. They gave them, and of course, they lied about it. And they're still lying about it. You'll have a four-tape set and or the book. A recent studies just came out within the last 2 weeks where they actually took the squalene and aluminum, which was in the vaccines, and gave it to mice. And, of course, they saw the extensive neurological changes there. But you're not going to read about that in your local newspaper. We have a four-tape set on depleted uranium. We have a four-tape set on the Gulf War illness. You need to get this information. All of this is available from Radio Liberty by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Do you really care? Do you really care about those boys we're sending overseas? Oh, they said you've got to support the troops. You support the troops by getting the truth out about what happened on 9-1-1. And if you want to know what happened on 9-1-1, we've got some great DVDs. 9-1-1 Mysteries, 9-1-1 Press for the Truth, the story of the four wives who lost their husbands when the Twin Towers came down. Do you know that 1,100 bodies have never been recovered, not even any part of them at all? If they were crushed when the buildings come down, they would have still been there. Were they simply vaporized when the buildings exploded? Nobody wants to ask what happened to those 1,100 bodies there in the Twin Towers. The DVDs again, 9-1-1 Press for the Truth, 9-1-1 Mysteries, Beyond Treason, which is Alex Jones' excellent presentation, In Plain Sight by Joyce's husband, and then, of course, the Day That Changed America Forever. They're all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers, but please pray. Please pray for Radio Liberty. And again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927.